History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by Provident Payments, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there that should not go untold. And we've learned they don't have to go untold if we'll just take the initiative to ask a few questions and maybe more importantly, to patiently listen. You never know what you might hear. Of course, we want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along the way, we learn so much. But not only are we educated, not only are we entertained, we really are inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. This weekend, of course, we mark Memorial Day, a day set aside in our country to remember the more than 1 million men and women since the founding of our republic to pay the ultimate price for our freedom. In World War II alone, that number was more than 406,000. And for many of the families of those Gold Star heroes, questions still linger 75 years later. But that doesn't necessarily mean that those questions need to remain unresolved. If you heard our most recent episode with Navy veteran Vic Walters, you heard about the mission that has haunted him for more than 75 years when he witnessed a PB-4Y2 privateer, which had been damaged by Japanese fire, crash into the ocean upside down. His memories of that mission over Singapore on June 1, 1945, have helped propel the quest of one Gold Star family and, in turn, 11 others. Buren O'Kane was a 19-year-old fresh out of East Bakersfield High School in Bakersfield, California, when he made his final flight that day. Jeff O'Kane is his great-nephew, the grandson of Buren's younger brother, and he's going to help us understand what this journey has been like for his family. Jeff, where did this all begin for you?
I don't even know when it started. We'd always, heard about it, and it was spoke of often. My grandfather and my father and my whole family always discussed Buren, and it was just known in my family. But I couldn't tell you exactly what age it started. But it's a family legend talking about the life of Buren O'Kane and the regrets of, him not coming back. And that's kind of what started my dad's mission in 1997 to find out everything, to find out the story from the men that were there that day. My dad was able to accomplish that in 2002 when he actually met Victor Walters and started this whole thing.
I want to follow it along your path because you spent so much time now researching it, following your dad's footsteps on that. What did you know? What did your family know about him? What had happened to him? Can you give us a picture of what you actually knew, and then we'll fill in the blanks of what you've been able to find out since?
We knew he was on a crew with Lieutenant Commander Mears, Howard F. Mears, 12 men aboard PB-4Y2. We know that they were shot down on a photo recon flight over Singapore, two planes. His plane had gone down, the crash was witnessed, all believed dead. That's about all we knew about it. We've got some letters that came from the Navy, the commander of the squadron wrote several letters to my great-grandmother and great-grandfather, giving what information he could, and even following up after the war to give them some more information, but still not everything. And that's the desire my grandfather always had, to know what happened that day from the guys that were there.
And did you have a sense growing up as to how this had affected your great-grandparents, your grandfather, the rest of the family, how they had experienced it and processed it and reacted to it?
Yeah, my grandmother, Faye Houseman, she had grown up across the street. She was born on the same street as the O'Kanes and grew up with the O'Kane family. My grandmother is still alive today at 89 years old, and she is the keeper of the story. And she lived with my great-grandparents when my grandfather went in the Navy. And she tells the story of how it affected my great-grandmother, where they had the news, 75 days at the end of the war that the plane had gone down. And, still holding on to hope that maybe they would find him in a camp. And so they watched the releases of the names, hoping to see his name on there. And down to where they went through the last camp, and his name wasn't on there. He was never found. And that she continued to hope that her son would come home.
Mm. So your understanding of this was, you know, we've got this information from the government. He died in action. Was there ever a thought of, hey, maybe we can find something more out? Or where did that come from?
Well, it started with my dad going into the story. He got, in 1997, was actually sent to the Philippines, which is where their story, where they took off from the mission. Port-au-Prince Airfield, Palawan, Philippines, is where they took off from to fly to Singapore. So working there, my dad was able to research and found the graveyard that they have for the American soldiers in Manila. And at the time, the only place in the world where his name existed, mm-hmm. on the walls of the missing, mm-hmm. in a foreign country. And I continued on 2 years later, was actually sent to Singapore on a job where he was able to research the library archives. And actually found the newspaper reports, Japanese-controlled Singapore, and the story of them shooting down the plane. And they also claimed they shot down Victor Walter's plane, flown by Lieutenant Junior Grade Heiler, and which Victor thought was pretty funny. He'd heard that before.
Well, I guess I should ask you, too. What do you know about Buren before this happened?
I have stories from my grandmother. We have his letters that we sent in, not a whole bunch, just different things that had gone on in his life. One of my grandfather's longtime friends, Robert Renfro, I actually deer hunted with him for years, but I never knew the story to the extent that I know now. He passed on quite a few years ago, but I sure wish he was here to talk about this, because I think mm-hmm. he would love this. That what we're trying to do and what we're trying to accomplish. Buren was 19 years old the day he died. He joined right after he graduated high school. My grandmother's brother, Robert Renfro, they all went down to the Navy. His older brother, Clyde, had already joined, and they all went down. But he didn't get to join the Navy until December, because he didn't turn 18 until December, and it sounds like my great-grandmother wasn't very willing to sign him over.
So your father decides he's going to try to find some more information.
Well, he got sent on a job there. He figured he might as well do it while he was there.
So if he hadn't been sent to the Philippines for work, maybe this whole journey wouldn't have started?
Yeah, more than likely. I wouldn't have had anywhere to go and run with this. He had done so much, and it was just so amazing what he was able to find. It's always been a very big story in my family that has continued on.
If you can, give me a sense for some of the things he was able to find, and it kind of sounds like every answer created two or three more questions.
Oh, yeah. We don't ever run out of questions. It is just a pit of questions. But, yeah, he went to the Philippines, got further into the story, and then going to Singapore, and then, finding the newspaper article, and then the search for the gunners aboard the other plane. There were 13 men aboard, and my dad, after 97, 99, started looking on the Internet to see if he could find one of those men. And he was able to find Mr. Victor Walters from San Diego in 2002. And he was able to finally share the firsthand story verified by the 7 remaining crew members of what happened that day. Not some dry, story, but, the guys that were there, the feelings that they had, it was very amazing. And my grandfather got to hear that. My father got to share that with his father. And like you said, the more questions came up. He had 5 pictures of the recon camera of my uncle's plane going down that day, which was amazing for my family to see. 67 years after the plane went down, we have pictures of their final moments. And that was pretty amazing.
And before that, you guys didn't know those pictures existed?
No, sir.
What was that moment like to realize that and to actually look and say, he was in that plane right there?
It was very neat. I was young. I was in my early 20s. I was, I don't understand. I didn't understand it then like I do now. I thought it was amazing what my dad did, but I don't know. Maybe it just didn't hit me. I was too busy working and chasing girls.
So those pictures, what kind of information were you guys able to glean, and what kind of hunt did that set you off on?
Well, it was the end of the story. Mm-hmm. We finally knew the firsthand account from the guys that were there. The things that had happened, the scares that they had. Victor Walters spoke about his gun sight going out while he was shooting at one of the KA-43 Oscars, and how he had scrambled to get his manual sight up, and he was so afraid, and then he looked up and the plane was gone. So he had got enough rounds close enough to it that they decided to go somewhere else. And just some of the fears that, you know, they had. It was just neat to find the personal story where one point Victor Walters had stated that when they started firing and you know, their gunners are all firing and the planes are making multiple runs on them. And he just said, I wish I was somewhere else. And then going on into, he was the port waist gunner, and my uncle's plane went down on the port side. So he was the first one to see it. And he reported over the intercom back to the pilot that the privateer is down. And then the pilot, Lieutenant Heiler, asked him, are there any survivors? And then Victor Walters gets to explain what kind of hell that question was for him. Because his first reaction is, how in the hell do I know? But his next worry was, if he told him, I don't know, that he knew Lieutenant Heiler would turn that plane on its wing and go back and check. And it might have gotten them all killed.
Mm-hmm.
And he just quickly calculated that nobody survives, an upside-down water hit nose first, and he told him, no, sir, no survivors. But you can tell that the question and the answer weighed on him.
Yeah, and that was clear even in my conversation with him.
Yeah.
And just one of the things I hear a lot from folks who listen, you know, to the veterans who share their stories here is, you know, my dad never talked about it. Hearing so-and-so talk about what he did makes me imagine or have an idea of what my dad went through that he never told me about. Was there an element of that for you, that in hearing Mr. Walters' story, what it was like to fly those missions, what he saw that day, that gave you a glimpse into maybe what Buren's life as a Navy aviator might have been like?
Yeah, it was amazing to see their feelings and what went on and you know, some of the stories that happened during the firefight. They stayed and protected my uncle's plane for 35 minutes, trying to protect them into a water landing in enemy territory when they could have just flown away. Their mission was complete. They had the pictures. Nobody would have thought badly of them if they just came back to base. The other plane's going down. And that's one of the things I love about the story, is that Lieutenant Heiler and his crew did not leave them. They stayed with them all the way down from 10,000 feet to 1,000 feet and covered that plane. They didn't have to, but they did. And they put themselves in great peril to do so. It's just nice to know that, you know, they didn't go at this alone. They were in dire straits, but they had Lieutenant Heiler and crew on their wing all the way down until the moment that they crashed.
And those are details you didn't know until you talked to Walters?
Oh, yeah. He has a dope sheet that he supplied that has a brief story, and then his firsthand account of, you know, the things that went on. And they had a top gunner running out of ammunition, and he called out that he was running out. I believe the gunner was O'Rourke, and he was doing the front top gunner. He was doing a lot of the firing, and he called out that he was running out of ammunition, and it was a big scare for him because he was the guy shooting the most. Mm-hmm. And they had someone run down and get more ammunition and take it up to him. And he had a dual 50s set up, and it's actually mentioned in the report filed by his pilot that instead of taking both the guns down to reload, he just started reloading one while he continued to fire with the other one and then switched once he got one reloaded. And he actually credits the gunners as being one of the main reasons why they got out of there.
I guess. I mean, that sounds pretty intense. So was there anything else that you guys found out at the time that was of value or added to your understanding?
One of the men from VPB 111 after the war, they actually gave us a map that was drawn by a Japanese pilot. They couldn't remember which one went to Japan several years after the war, met with some pilots. One of the pilots claimed that he engaged him that day in Singapore. And the way they vetted him was they slid a map of Singapore to him with a pen. And he drew out the whole engagement. They knew he was definitely one of the pilots that was there. They don't believe he's the pilot that shot my uncle's plane down. They report 13 to 18 fighters after him that day. But he was definitely one of the ones that engaged. It's how they vetted him. And so that was about it. We had the full story. We had the five pictures. And it's just kind of, the mission was complete. We'd known everything there was to know, and everybody was satisfied until I dredged all this up in 2018.
Yeah, so what changed? What sparked that?
I just started digging into this again, looking through the internet. I kept finding pictures. Other people have pictures of my uncle's plane going down. And they're really good pictures. They're very clear. And so I started contacting people to see where they got them from. And most of the people tracked back to VPB 106 Squadron. They were squadron mates. They had copies of the pictures that had been uploaded to the internet. There was a guy that was stationed in Guam that had come across the pictures, scanned them, and put them up on the internet trying to find the story. He ran his own story on my uncle's crew, his own personal mission to find out what happened to this plane. And actually, one of the guys from VPB 111, Robert Wolport, actually wrote in his book about this mission and quite a few other missions that he was on. And he actually saw it and reported the whole, excerpt from his book of what happened that day to that flight.
Is this something that would pop back into your head occasionally? Like, I wonder if there's anything else we can find?
Yeah, and that was my goal, just to see if there was anything more that we could discover. I saw an advertisement for Project Recover, and I sent some stuff to them, and they started to dig into this. We had the Japanese map. It actually shows where the Japanese pilot says the plane crashed, and Project Recover started running that down while I continued to contact people on the internet. They worked out that from the Japanese fighter's map, that X where the privateer crashed is actually under their harbor expansion that went in a couple of years ago. So our mission started and stopped immediately. And a couple of days later, talking with the VP Navy webmaster, Nevins Frankel, he actually asked me, have you ever read the 38-page declassified report of your uncle's mission? To which I replied, no. And so he sent it to me. And that was the day we discovered that there were actually 29 photos of my uncle's plane going down and maps drawn by the navigator, longitude and latitude reported. Going through those 29 photos, there were two pictures of my uncle's plane striking the water. And I just remember looking at the picture just going, wow. I mean, that is the exact moment that all 12 men died. Just kind of mulled that over for a minute, and then I saw it. I saw the island in the background of my uncle's plane striking the water. And then the quest began, can I find that island? And the answer is yes, I can.
But that may not mean what you think it means. It's time for our first break, but there's much more to come on this Memorial Day edition of Hometown Heroes. What did Jeff O'Kane have to do to find that island? And what is he hoping is going to come next? Head over to hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes page on Facebook for photos and a video with Jeff detailing some of the steps along his family's journey of discovery. And Hometown Heroes will come right back after this.